Thank you. Cade. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. No, Bob is not playing hooky on Friday, but his network interface connection may darn well have been. It's Friday, Front Porch Friday. Pardon me while I knock the dust off my trouser pants as I head for the rocking chair on the front porch. I've been crawling around under the dadgum desk for the last, and trust me, it's not one of those crawling around under the desk kind of parts. It's fun. Been crawling around under the desk for the last couple of hours, as one of our buddies says, herding goats. I'm here, but I'm dead from the neck up. It's about 13 minutes past the hour. I am late. I don't like to be late, but I also don't like to miss shows unless, you know, I've got, you know, a limb hanging or something. You know me. I have a feeling we will have some fun tonight. After all, there's still a lot of furor over that woman. That woman. That woman! We are speaking, of course, of the Honorable Sonia Sotomayor. I know, it's probably, some of you are a little tired of it, but you know what? I'm not. Because every time the right wing pumps out this filth, we understand a little bit better how desperate they are and how near to dead they are. This is all just warm up to the actual funeral music for the right wing. Plenty of pop that pee, Bob, for God's sakes. Plenty of evidence along those lines, including, and I really do think we have to start with this tonight, including installment number 3 of the Tom Tancredo hit parade. Last night it was La Raza. You remember La Raza, the one that sings about the colors of the rainbow. La Raza is a Latino KKK. Before that, what was it? They're all beginning to run together for me now. Well, and again, I persist in my essential question, to wit. What is this man doing on the air? What expertise does he have apart from the fact that he is a bigoted, hate-filled, pus-bag freak from the right wing? Why not just have the Grand Dragon on and get done with it? Exalted Noble Lumpkin? Why not? It's the same. So today he shows up on MSNBC. It goes MSNBC, CNN, MSNBC. He's like a little ping pong ball, isn't he? God knows he's got about as much brains inside him as there is inside a ping pong ball. That woman. No, this time they're expanding the base. He shows up on MSNBC this afternoon. Where he takes questions from David Schuster. And of course, there's a game here. And I understand what the game is. Maybe this is why he keeps showing up, because maybe some of this really is driving home the point, driving home the fact that the oxymoron, Flush Flembolt, my friends, give me a pill, and a little Dominican boy. Flush Flembolt is the head of the Repiglican Party once and for all. And so David Schuster queries Tom Tancredo. That's an old Arapaho name, meaning doesn't like people darker than him. And, it's Italian. Well, this is good. This is kind of precious.
Here's what Rush Limbaugh said about Sotomayor. Watch.
How do you get promoted in a Barack Obama administration? By hating white people. Or even saying you do. Or that they're not good. Or that put them down, whatever. Make white people the new oppressed minority. And they're going right along with it because they're shutting up. They're moving to the back of the bus. They're saying, I can't use that drinking fountain. Okay. I can't.
Okay. We're dealing here with audio from video. And I just have to tell you, because it's my job. You know, the really great radio people can make things come alive in your mind and make things visual for you. I'm going to try that for just a moment here, if that's all right. Flush Flembolt has really got to do something. He's got this Ditto Cam thing going there, and his cheaply gold-plated Electrovoice RE20, the same microphone we use here in the fabulous Horn Studios. But and he's sitting there behind it. But today he's wearing, or in this video he's wearing, a yellow polo shirt. And I got to tell you, he looks nothing so much as he looks like a living lemon. There's so much of him, and as a person of girth, I comprehend this. But there are fashion choices you make when you're a large guy like me or Flush, and there are choices you don't make. I don't wear, for instance, shirts with horizontal stripes because it just looks like the stripes go on and on forever. I wear, and they're hard to find. I used to have a really nice rugby shirt that instead of having horizontal stripes, it had vertical stripes. And I loved that thing. The store where I bought it the millions of years ago when I rode to the store on the back of my dinosaur is now out of business, of course. It's been run into the ground by predatory capitalism. It was a little chain of stores. There was one in the Lenox Mall in Atlanta where I lived. Not in the Lenox Mall. I didn't live in the Lenox Mall, of course. I lived in Atlanta. And there was a store there called Britches of Georgetown. They had the best khakis I have ever owned in my life. Great Madras shirts, wonderful shorts, and this wonderful vertically striped gold and blue, because I am at all times a Mountaineer, rugby shirt. But Rush is looking a little bit egg yolky. He's like an egg yolk with a head. He's like an egg yolk with eyeballs and a mouth. And I'm only doing this by means of, because, I mean, you know what an egg yolk looks like right after you cracked it and it's sitting there in the skillet and your egg's frying and you're not doing over easy. It's just a nice sunny side up and the egg yolk is kind of with the heat and it's kind of sitting there jiggling. That's what Rush looks like. Just to give you the visual, since this is radio and I owe you some visuals because it makes demands of the mind. That video doesn't make. He looks like a living egg yolk. But what was this? Something about the back of the bus? Huh?
Make white people a new oppressed minority. And they're going right along with it because they're shutting up. They're moving to the back of the bus. They're saying, I can't use that drinking fountain. Okay. I can't use that restroom. Okay. That's the modern day Republican Party.
Mr. Tancredo, do you agree that the Obama administration hates white people?
I don't know. But I'll tell you this.
You don't know?
I certainly agree that...
I don't know. I don't know. Now, had he appeared, say, 3 or 4 years ago, had he appeared in, oh, I don't know, say, October of 2005, and had the query been put to him in the wake of Katrina and all of its hell on earth, and the living proof that the Bush administration did, in fact, hate black people, had the question been put to him, Congressman Tancredo, do you think the Bush administration hates black people, you know, especially after the Kanye West comment and all of that? What would the answer have been? I mean, I'm asking for comparison and contrast purposes. You know, that stuff rubbed off on me in high school and so forth, and never got... Compare and contrast, please, Bob. Because in the wake of Kanye West's comment, George Bush don't like black people. In the wake of his comment, Tom Tancredo, there was much fulmination on the much kerfuffle. I like that word, kerfuffle. There was a lot of carrying on the part of the right wing. Truly hate-filled attempts to vilify Kanye West for having the mere, the barest temerity to speak his mind, and to say in the wake of the epic fail of the Bush administration in the lower Ninth Ward and along the Gulf Coast, for having the temerity to say George Bush don't like black people. And there were people, right-wingers, who were absolutely frothing at the mouth.
How dare he say such a thing about the President of the United States? Obviously, he is a hate-filled individual in his own right.
You can go back and find. You remember this stuff. And had Tom Tancredo, who was then a congressman, had he appeared... And the question been put to him as it was just put to him here by David Schuster. Mr. Tancredo, do you agree with Rush Limbaugh? Do you agree that the Obama administration hates white people? And he says, oh, I don't know. By God, if the question had been, Congressman Tancredo, do you think the Bush George Bush doesn't like black people? And for all I know, he was asked this question, because this man has never, he and his rug, have never shied away from a television camera. He likes to get right up there on top of a lens before he starts foaming real good and hating on the brown people. He would have been apoplectic with... I'm not going to dignify that with an answer. George Bush not liking black people. Of course he does. Didn't you see his sainted mother in the Astrodome standing among all those people? Them? But when asked, does he think the Obama administration hates white people, he equivocates. This is a little bit, this is another one of those examples of the music that happens in the silences between the notes. This is Freudianly telling.
Do you agree that the Obama administration hates white people?
I don't know. But I'll tell you this.
You don't know?
I certainly agree that.
In other words, they might?
No, what do I? I have no idea whether they hate white people or not. But I will tell you this.
Do you have any idea that they don't hate white people?
Having people I'm sick of having people suggest that because I am Caucasian, I cannot. And that's the suggestion here, is that if you are white, Caucasian, male, you cannot comment on this sort of thing. That's ridiculous.
Mr. Tang.
Nobody said that! Nobody at all said that. I haven't said that. Oh, no. Now, I have asked why anybody would want him to comment on it insofar as he's not in power. He doesn't hold political office. He is just another Joe on the street. I have asked what confers upon him special status to what entitles him to opine on these issues. The same thing goes for Newt Gingrich. What's the difference between having Newt Gingrich on a news program and having some dude who just polished off a bottle of Wild Irish Rose under the bridge? Their opinions are equal. Don't you see? Same. Crazy old dude with the screw top wine has an opinion. Doesn't hold political office, wields no power. Crazy old Newt Gingrich has an opinion. Doesn't hold office, wields no power. Again, this is about the for-profit media. Even if in this instance David Schuster does a pretty cute job of humiliating this hateful old bigot. Let's finish it off.
I cannot, and that's the suggestion here, is that if you are white, Caucasian, male, you cannot comment on this sort of thing. That's ridiculous.
Mr. Tancredo, La Raza is the largest national Hispanic civil rights organization in the country. Susan Molinari has even gotten some awards from them. You called them a Latino KKK. Would you like to take this opportunity to apologize?
No.
See, that's why you're incompetent to comment on these things. Tom, you old bigot, you. You old bigot, you. Is because you have proven yourself incompetent. You have proven yourself incapable of engaging in reasoned discussion among reasonable people. I mean, does this make sense? I hope I'm not, I just don't get it. I mean, there's got to be a scholar. Doesn't the right wing have any scholars? Doesn't the right wing have any intelligent people who can speak from a position of either intellectual authority or political authority, anything? Is there nothing left in the right wingosphere except Tom Tancredo and Newt Gingrich and Dick Cheney before he dicks you? Is that it? That's all they got now? And they're offended when we say that they're a party of cranky old white men? Who are they putting out flipping spokesmen? Cranky old white men! You know, I'm so damn pink, my skin burns under a refrigerator light bulb, okay? I don't think... And see, this is maybe the difference between me and Tom Tancredo. I don't think being white confers anything special on me beyond the fact that I'm... It means that I'm a particular flavor of human. The Pat Buchanans and the Tom Tancredos and the Dick Cheneys and Newt Gingrichs of the world, however, think that it's a get-out-of-jail-free card. They think that they're living in the world of that Eddie Murphy skit from years back, where he pretended to be a white guy going into the bank. Oh, you want some free money, sir? Here, let me get you some free money. It's not a damn country club pass. And it takes a really specially weird, twisted version of a human being, or attempt at one.
Mr. Tancredo, we're charging you with attempted human.
To think that it does.
And Flush Flimbaugh.
All the white people are going back to the back of the bus and saying, no, my friends, the white people have gone to the back of the bus and said, no, we won't drink from that water fountain anymore.
Which ones? Where? When?
Who? What? How much? Why?
All the journalism questions. Let's just get them all out there and see if we can get answers to any of them. Back of the... That son of a bitch self-made. In those callous, ignorant, pig-ignorant comments, he has shown once again that the blood shed in the name of freedom during the civil rights era is beneath his own notice and beneath his own contempt. No white people are being beaten. No white people are swinging in trees. No white people's houses are being burned down. No white people are being shot with a high-powered rifle that is standing on a motel balcony or on the front porch of their home. No white people's children are being menaced. No one's being denied an education. No one's being turned away from the polls. No one's being given a literacy test that involves reading a Chinese restaurant menu or a literacy test that involves signing one's name with a ballpoint pen on wax paper and that thereby being proven unable to write. There aren't any signs in small southern towns that says, "White boy, don't let the sun set on you here." But in white privilege right-wing world, even challenging white privilege, that privilege that people with pale skin in this country have by default, even whether they recognize it or not, even mentioning that, "It's reverse racism, my friends, it is." Where's that little Dominican boy? He should be here by now. Let's get Front Porch Friday started and go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Boss.
Sandra.
Oh, that's a great opening. I mean, it is really stunning that these freaks who are nowhere near power are speaking. And it's, to me, it's like some sort of horror show looking at it, because I'm like, is this for real?
Well, there's a shame in it where the for-profit media are concerned.
Well, no, it is all about them, because there is no reason why that Tom Tancredo should be. I mean, he's a bigot. I mean, he's a racist, confirmed. He revels in it. He admits it. Yet he's being passed around from corporate media entity to corporate media entity as a viable argument to this woman. I'm confused. Because when I opened the paper today, I saw that yet another black person was shot by some white cop. Oh, the black person was a cop. Did you know that? Good Lord. Give me a break, okay? I'm, like, so over these.
Yeah, there's a real world out there, Sandra.
No, but these
crackers, you live in it.
These crackers are cracking up at the thought of this Negro who's in charge, and all of a sudden all these brown people are popping up. They're losing it. That's all I can say.
But there's so much dishonesty in it, as you and I have discussed from time to time, Sandra. It's not like, I mean, yeah, there's a few people of color in this administration, but the right wing doesn't even have the common decency to recognize that in many instances, they're doing the same corporate.
Well, no, but I mean, the power structure is still, you know, I mean, for all intents and purposes, like I bring up the black guy. It's like this guy was a 25-year-old policeman doing his job, and Whitey rolls up and thinks, "Oh, there's a Negro with a gun. Let's kill him," right?
Well, you know, you got a good chance that he did. I mean, a black person, gun, you know, got to be up to no good.
Right. Well, no, but it's just sort of like, you know, Obama or not, it's like the situation down below seems to be the same, as far as I can tell. They killing and locking brown people up.
You know, I just got I got a story earlier today from our buddy David in South Carolina, and it's the story of a guy from Wasman, and I assume Wasman, South Carolina. Sounds like a South Carolina town. A young man named Gerald Manning, who was a local athletic star at the high school, And just on made-up stuff, the man's been in prison for 30-plus years now on rape and murder charges for things he did not do, just didn't do. The prosecutor who withheld evidence that would have exonerated him is now a judge who holds life and death powers over other human beings. Suffice to say that Gerald Manning does not burn under a refrigerator light bulb like I do. His skin is considerably darker. And therefore, justice was optional for Gerald Manning.
And this is
that world.
No, but it's just, I mean, I'm just so sick to death of, all I can say is thank you, Bill Clinton. I'm sorry. Because the consolidation of this media is so detrimental to us. I mean, every day it just becomes more and more apparent just how damning it is. And with the newspapers going away, I shudder to think what's going to be happening here, because information is so hard to come by as is, right?
Yeah.
And the way they're trying to get a grip of the Internet, I have no idea what that's going to look like in 5 years either. A two-tier pay to read the news. You heard about that, right?
Yeah.
They're about to charge for content now on the web.
Oh, and see, the thing is, that ain't going to... Didn't the New York Times try that and fail miserably?
Well, yeah, they had to go free again, didn't they?
Yeah. I mean, they tried to make Maureen Dowd something you'd have to pay for. Why would you pay for Maureen Dowd when you can just go read Josh Marshall right at the first time?
No, I mean, they had you pay for the editorial, right?
Right.
I can barely remember what it was because...
Yeah, Frank Rich, Bob Herbert, Maureen Dowd, Bill Kristol, whatever. Yeah, you had to pay for that stuff.
Okay, and so they gave that up, and so now what, they're trying to figure out yet a new way to charge people? Or are they going to charge the other websites for getting the stories? I mean, it's a joke, right? But I just find it really disturbing because people are already so unaware. Just in my daily conversations with people, they don't know if they're coming or not, right?
Yeah.
So what's going to happen, you know, say 2 years from, you know, I don't know. I don't, what's happening with net neutrality? I mean, is that...
Supposedly, everything turned into sunshine and violets when Obama came into office, but I don't think it's quite that simple. Because as long as the for-profit model is the controlling model, we're going to have a problem. Because
so we're just subjected to Newt Gingrich of all people. Come on. Pretty soon they're going to have Tom DeLay back out there.
I hate to break it to you, but he's already been back out there.
Oh, God. Well, it's like these people, these Republicans or fascists or whatever they are, they never leave with the media like we have, you know?
Yeah, and that's what I keep coming back to, Sandra. These right wing punk ass monsters are going to show up if you give them a chance to. You know, if it rains, dandelions come up.
And the
for-profit media are the ones who are empowering these fools.
Well, no, and also you look at the fact that Dick Cheney has had this platform. It is outrageous, and so much so that it obviously has moved Obama because he ain't backed the hell off big time. Now, I don't know if that's the military behind or people like Dick Cheney, but he certainly seems to be worried about their platform because he's not doing what he said he would.
Well, I think that's probably a very simple case of the oldest political aphorism of them all, that there's only two ways to run an election campaign, and that is unopposed or scared to death. And he's president, and the minute that you become president, you suddenly realize that you're a pretty special person, Sandra, and you want to keep doing this as long as they'll let you.
Well, right, yeah,
and so you start looking at things not through the filter of what's best for the American people, but what's best for making sure that I can get the second term, so in my second term I can really do the best for the American people.
Oh yeah, I mean yeah.
It's a product of a busted system.
No, it's really hideous. I mean, I guess they, I guess you make a good point about that, because everything seems to have come to a standstill, and, you know, what people are sitting around expecting, demanding, isn't even on the table. I just like the health care thing. I mean, it's a joke, that, you know. And your situation in Virginia, you know, I've been sort of looking a bit more into that, and even on Democracy Today they had somebody talking about it.
That was our good friend Jeff Biggers, and I did have a chance to catch that. And he's right.
Yeah, well, it was good, and the main thing about that was getting shafted by the Obama administration, because they said one thing, and now it's some other tune.
Yeah, it is.
And these new... what do they call them? Permits, so they can keep blowing up the mountains, right?
Yeah.
They issued
42
of them, right?
Right. They had sort of put a moratorium on 48, and issued 42 out of 48. Now the six they stopped were real monster jobs, and I have to give credit where credit is due. They would have been approved under the Bush administration without so much as the bat of an eye.
But, I mean, what is this, I'm just so ignorant about this. What is this sort of soot that he's talking about is at risk of sort of exploding everywhere and just causing this, you know, just horrible environmental catastrophe? And it's like, why isn't this in the news? I'm just confused.
Well, I don't think you're confused. I think the for-profit media are, Sandra.
Didn't we just have this in with the Tennessee?
Yes,
Valley
yes,
thing?
Yeah.
And that's what you're facing over here, right?
Yeah, they took in Kingston, Tennessee. There was 1 billion gallons of toxic coal ash sludge to the point that our buddy John Wathan, the Hurricane Creek keeper from Alabama, said that they were floating so huge on the river that they called them ashbergs.
Wow! What? Wow!
TVA is having to buy up properties because the whole people tend to think, I guess, Sandra, that because no Geiger counters are going that everything's okay. But the fact of the matter is that whole region's been toxified. Tennessee Valley Authority is having to buy up vacation homes that used to be worth $500,000.
No, I heard that stuff is like some of the most toxic material that a human being can come in,
yes,
can encounter.
Yes, it is.
I mean, I did, get that much information. So, with that, in light of that, which we just are dealing with, why in the world would they continue with this in your neck of the woods?
Because I'm not trying to oversimplify, Sandra, and I'm also not trying.
You can, because I'm confused.
I'm not trying to be bitter. I just am. I don't have to try. The Appalachians are a resource colony of the United States of America. There is nothing you cannot do to an Appalachian person that the federal government will not wink at as long as, there were some jobs involved. We had jobs poisoning them hillbillies. I mean, I try to talk to my elected representatives, okay, I gotta be straight. When I go to talk to somebody, I'm respectful. I'm nice. Hey, how you doing? Good afternoon. Hey, you did some great stuff on that blah, 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 blah. Can we talk a little bit about mountaintop removal? And the minute it comes out of your mouth, they go, "Rah!" And it's like, oh my God, you're actually a dinosaur. There's jobs. West Virginia won't have no jobs. We won't have no jobs in West Virginia. And it's so insulting, Sandra.
Well, no, but his report was suggesting that, more jobs would be created if they went back to the old way of removing coal. I mean, I'm like,
there's that, and more jobs will be created if we transition away from coal.
Well, no, there's that, but I'm just looking at what they try to sell us, a bill of goods with the jobs, when in fact, this blowing up of the mountains create less jobs, which is what these corporations want, of course. If they can do something and make more money from it, well, everything else be damned. That's always the end game.
But we've got a whole dysfunctional Stockholm syndrome thing going on in Appalachia where, people drive around with the little decals on the back of their pickup truck window glass. Coal miners do it in the dark. As if, and you know what? Those old coal miners like my grandfather and my great-grandfather, uncles, great-uncles, and so forth, those people were heroic. They had, because, you know, they worked, they walked into the mine, they rode into the mine in some cases, side by side with grim death.
And they
stood up, and they were the heart and soul of the organizing movement.
Well, no, I mean, I'm sure, it, yeah.
And it got us through the Industrial Revolution.
Right. No,
but,
and it also contributed to all the various humane work laws that we have now.
The UMWA, my God, they've done some heroic things. The UMWA was among the first, if not the first, union in the United States that was integrated from the day it was formed. The UMWA welcomed women as underground coal miners.
Mm.
You know, and that stuff, you cannot over that stuff. But now the UMWA, because it made terrible, terrible decisions with regard to its rank and file workers and left a bunch of them out in the cold, they got themselves a few members working on some of these mountain removal jobs, and all of a sudden mountain removal is the best thing since sliced bread. But if you go and you ask an underground miner from 20 years ago, what do you think of mountain removal? He'll tell you, and he'll tell you it's a crying shame. He'll tell you that it's spitting on the memory of everybody who built that union. That now Cecil Roberts and the leadership of that union have gotten in bed with the mountain removers.
Yeah, I realize that once again, you know, you cannot rely on this sort of top down solutions, but. You know, it just sounds like the coal industry is just king, and they're in lockstep with the Obama administration, just like they were with the Bush administration.
You want to know how bad it is?
Yeah.
You're afraid to ask, I know. A couple of schools here in southern West Virginia, Sandra, have just finished their unit on Coal is Good for You, brought to you by the Friends of Coal Ladies Auxiliary. I'm not kidding. Fourth graders, Sandra, fourth graders were subjected to involuntary propaganda about the coal industry, and they dared call it education. Here's one step worse. One of them, you know, it wasn't all public schools. One of them was a local parochial school, I think the St. Francis Catholic Elementary School. And you know, the one, you know, we can get kind of wrought about Pope Benny and the fact that he's, you know, really wrong about a whole lot of things. But generally, you have to kind of say that the Roman Catholic Church, where social justice has been concerned, has had a fairly decent track record. And there's a Catholic school that's basically got a class unit on poisoning your generation and why it's good?
Well, I mean, it's just sort of like the company town. Globalization has made whole countries and whole regions like a company town. You know, these multinationals are dictating. They have no allegiance. And the propaganda just is off the hook. That's an outrage. I don't even know what to say about it.
We drive up and down the road here in Appalachia, and there's a company down in the Kanawha Valley, which is the beating heart of West Virginia because it's where the state capital is, Charleston. And all over this state, you drive and you see billboards that this advertisements, you know, commercial matter. That this this company that is basically a Caterpillar dealership, and they supply the mountain removal jobs with the massive vehicles and earth-moving equipment and so forth that they need to destroy the mountains. So they put billboards all over West Virginia that say, coal. Yes, coal. Clean, carbon-neutral coal. And I've talked about these things before, and one of the frustrating things is that once again, as I've said, like, for instance, with liberal radio, you know, Guy James, me, Malloy, Hartman, folks like that, you know, finally there's a toehold where that sort of content is being provided to folks who want it, where before, for you, and it's being done by people because they're determined to do it. You know, there's Malloy out doing it on his own hook. You know, we seeded, and my point, this is not a huge diversion. My point is that we seeded the battlefield in the talk for format or medium. We seeded that battlefield completely. We didn't even have any fighters show up for 20 years and just completely gave the battlefield over to the right wing. Well, the same thing happens here in Appalachia. There's not one single billboard in West Virginia that counters those clean carbon neutral coal billboards. And by God, we need them.
Carbon neutral, God, that's really, I'm sort of stunned. And that's everywhere?
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, there's probably, this is not a big state, but I'd say there's probably 100 of them.
Well, let me ask you something. What's lining up to replace Byrd, Senator Byrd, for that state?
Every night before he goes to sleep, our governor, a man named Joe Manchin, who would blow up the whole state if he could, if it meant political power to him, a man who who's a Democrat, you know, one of those Dino Democrats, Democrat in name only. Every night before he goes to sleep, he falls on his knees and prays to God, "Dear Jesus, please let Robert Byrd die tonight."
And so what? He would appoint himself? I mean, how would that work?
Well, what he'd probably wind up doing, and many people speculate that the fix is already in, he would resign as governor. The Speaker of the West Virginia House would be elevated, or maybe it would be the President of the Senate. I can't remember. Who would then appoint him to fill Robert Byrd's seat.
Okay, and so is Virginia a sort of state like California is becoming, where there's a huge population of what I call disposable people, and the state is able to generate revenue, you know, irrespective of like a huge swath of poor people with no power? I mean, is that...
Well, it's not, in the case of West Virginia, Sandra, it's not a matter of becoming, it's a matter of that has been the nature of our existence. We are kept poor.
Okay, so, and the money that's being generated by all this coal is going, I mean, just for the sake of argument, is that money going anywhere of use?
We have something here called a coal severance tax.
I mean, is it like the oil in Alaska?
Oh, no. Okay, this is another one of those compare and contrast moments, Sandra. When Alaska was, when they discovered the oil up there and Alyeska started building the pipelines and all of that stuff, and Alaska looked, and they said, "My God, we're going to have a windfall here. What are we going to do with all the money?" Well, they impaneled a commission in Alaska to look at, you know, how they would deal with their resource extraction in their state. And they issued a report, and the first thing that existed in that report, the first thing they said is, "We've examined all the other models in the other states that have resource extraction. And we know one thing, if we don't know anything else. We don't want to do it the way West Virginia does it."
Shut up. Okay, so...
Because West Virginia's extraction model does virtually no good whatsoever for the people of West Virginia.
Okay.
So, by comparison, just to give you an idea, you may have heard us talk about the Coal River Wind Project. It's a proposed wind farm in southern West Virginia. That thing would generate a tax base, a tax income for Raleigh County, West Virginia, in the millions of dollars on an annual basis. Compare that with the, let's put it this way. It would probably generate, and maybe I got my numbers off a little bit. Somebody like Rory McElmoyle could straighten me out. But something like 10 times more money, maybe 100 times more tax revenue than the coal revenue coming out of the mountain.
Okay, so not only are they destroying the environment and poisoning people, the poisoned people aren't even getting a look-see on some windfall?
No. That would be communism.
You have to laugh about Alaska, but shoot, at least them people getting a check every year. You know?
Yeah, we don't get no check.
I'm not laughing because I'm laughing because it's just...
No, we laugh here, too, because if we didn't, we'd just sit around bawling. We'd all be either suicidal or homicidal or both. No, we get nothing. We get, you know, but we do get told, you know, again with the billboards that I was telling you about a minute ago. One of the other ones we get is this black background with a yellow light bulb and big old letters that says, coal, it keeps the lights on. And, you know, my wife and I were talking about that a little bit, and she got really offended, and I got offended with her. She said, you know what, if coal keeps the lights on, I want to know why I have to crank out a power bill every month.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's like, at least with the, I mean, cap and trade, you know, that's another one. I mean, there is some payment for being poisoned. These, your situation just sounds horrific. Wow.
It is. It is. And when I say resource colony, I mean resource colony like, I don't know, a mahogany forest in Central America or a banana plantation in Colombia.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Another example, just to let you know, you know, everybody pays property taxes. We pay more, and we got this little ramshackle house on 1 acre of ground, okay? I know for folks who live in cities and stuff, 1 acre may sound like a lot. It's not. We don't own the minerals underneath our ground. First of all, you know, you got to kind of wrap your head around that unless you live in a resource colony state. We do not own the ground under our ground.
Okay, who owns that?
Coal company.
Okay, and property taxes?
Okay, I pay more in property taxes on 1 acre with a house on it than a mineral rights owner. My acre with a ramshackle house, I pay more property taxes than somebody who owns 1,000 acres of coal.
How's that?
Well, because they're special and I'm not. They're coal and I'm not.
Oh, my goodness. And so the amount of coal is so great that, Obama can't...
No, because see, this is where you and me, we're going to get lost.
Okay.
Because Obama didn't carry Kentucky. Obama didn't carry West Virginia. Obama did not carry that little sort of nipple of Virginia that has coal in it. Obama didn't carry Tennessee, which has coal in it. Obama didn't carry Alabama that has coal in it.
Oh, that's because he might take all the guns? Is that right?
Well, no, it's because he's, you know, that one.
I know. No, I'm just being facetious. I mean, yeah, so these people are being...
He didn't carry any of that. He owes us, frankly, and I'm speaking in terms of political...
No, I know. Yeah.
He owes us not squat.
Right, right. Okay, so they all voted for McCain then, Republicans.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember the primary, let me go right now, the primary in West Virginia was like a Klan rally.
Well, no, I remember that whole thing where people were actually on tape saying, oh, no, no, we can't vote for a Negro. And I was like, ooh.
Yeah, and the thing is, let's see, what was it? 21, 23, 25% of the people who voted for Hillary Clinton in the West Virginia Democratic primary came straight out and straight up and said, I voted for Hillary Clinton in the Democratic primary because we got a closed primary, sort of.
Oh.
Republicans can't vote in it, but independents can. I voted for Hillary Clinton because I just can't imagine this country being run by one of his kind. And, you know, his mother was an atheist and he's a Muslim. Kid you not.
Right, okay.
And so he owes nothing to us, and yet he's bowing and scraping. You know, I got an email earlier today, Sandra, that was forwarded to me talking about... the so-called Democrats who are undermining what Barack Obama is, what little bit of liberalism he's trying to accomplish. And they are without fail Democrats from resource extraction states.
And Nebraska.
And Nebraska.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, and with that weak-ass... Reed, I don't know. I don't even know what to expect anymore. God,
it's a tough nut to crack, and It's off. It's damn near impossible to swallow. It's a bone in the throat for liberals, progressives, decent people in West Virginia. It's awfully disheartening, and in Appalachia generally, and I think probably outside Appalachia as well. It's a frustrating thing to look up and you know, you just want to, you know, no, I understand you're not going to be FDR, but can you be a little bit? Can we have, you know, one thing? You know, don't ask, don't tell. Just get rid of that now.
Well, yeah, just some sort of assertiveness. No.
No, it's one of those Dr. Evil moments. You know, throw me a bone here, people.
No, I'm completely appalled by his never-ending need for consensus on every goddamn issue. And it's like sometimes there is a right and a wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sometimes consensus means you're getting it wrong.
Oh, God, no, but so, in that whole sort of, you know, that whole mold that he seems to be permanently in is, I think it's more to what you said before. It's like, oh, this is pretty damn good. I need to stay here for 8 years. I think you're...
Yeah, and by golly, when I get my second term and I don't have to run again, I'm really going to do some good stuff.
Oh, what, find peace in the Middle East? Right?
Yeah.
Isn't that what they always do?
Yeah, or maybe we'll disarm North Korea.
Oh, no. North Korea is acting up.
Yeah, oh, you know, yeah.
That is killing me because it's just sort of like, you know what? You guys are hella stupid. They're like, that's, oh, God. I mean, I don't even want to get into whole foreign policy.
Oh, I know, but there's something about that saber rattling coming out of Pyongyang right now that makes me think that Dick Cheney has called in a favor.
Well, it's also, I mean, it's so predictable to the point where it's, you really got to wonder what with all this brain power Obama so-called has around him. Where, you know, what's up? You know what I mean? Hillary, does she really know what the hell she's doing?
You know, I haven't even had a ping back on her in a while. It's just kind of quiet in Foggy Bottom, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's just sort of, I mean, I heard her speaking about, you know, North Korea. It's like, you know what? That's straight out of Bush's playbook. Turn the page, dumbass.
Yeah, please. You know,
oh, my God.
Need a little of that hope? Need a little of that change?
Yeah, no, it's just sort of, you know, they really are just pulling from, you know, the well-crafted fascist playbook of the Bush administration on their foreign policy. And it's like, you got all this sort of, you know, not heritage, but Brookings Foundation people in there, supposed to be a bit more benign, but they're not, I don't know. I'm not very hopeful.
See, that's, you know, our fellow host Mark Levine was talking yesterday about the fact that Obama's going to the Middle East. And he said, you know, if we're not careful, if we don't get some human rights reforms in Egypt, it'll become as dangerous a country as Iran. And Mark and I, we do not see eye to eye on Iran.
One
of the things that you talk about, turn the page from the Bush administration. One of those pages that needs to be turned, ripped out, and burnt is this notion that we can designate a country as dangerous on our own whim. You know, the whole... There's nothing out there that says that, Iran is seeking a nuclear bomb, two, building one, three, has an arsenal, but they are talked about as if they do.
And not only that, to be honest, I'm sorry, and so what? Look what they're surrounded by.
There you go.
I'm sorry.
Sure.
I'm sorry, I gotta say it. I'm like, if you look at foreign policy, try to objectively, like not from our point of view, well, shit, I can't blame them for trying to arm themselves. Look at what they're dealing with. Israel, them people crazy. They're surrounded by the U.S. on all sides. Iraq, what's that?
Yeah, well, and here, just to be fair, you've got a government in Pakistan that's about as stable as warm jello. That has a nuclear arsenal, that believes in a particular flavor of Islam, that hates the flavor of Islam that Iran is.
And have you seen the humanitarian disaster? What is it, 1.5 million people?
Yeah.
Displaced recently? I mean, I'm just, you know, outrageous.
And yet we seem to be intent on... I know Mahmoud Ahmadinejad comes out and says things that are then translated as, you know, I want to eat Israeli babies for breakfast with melons. Yeah, I know he does that. And I know that thing in Switzerland, that ginned-up piece of street theater that happened in his address. I understand all that. But is it just you, me, the Horn family, that understands that that kind of needling of one another is predicated on the last needle? You needle me, I needle you, you needle me again, I get two needles.
No, and also the whole Netanyahu, the way he had Obama walk in the line, it just made me feel sick. I'm sorry. I'm like looking at that meeting, I'm like, ew. You know, I couldn't even believe how Obama was so careful with his word.
Well, see, I go back to that Bush, that business where, what was his name, Ehud Barak? Said, well, heck yeah, I called George Bush and told him what to say, have Condoleezza Rice say at the UN. Of course I did.
Right. And, you know, what is that? I'm sorry. That's
embarrassing. Among other things, it's profoundly embarrassing.
And it feeds into, you know, some unfortunate things, you know, that I won't get into, you know, as far as why is this country having this much power over our foreign policy, you know? You've got to wonder.
You do have to wonder. I mean, and you know, the whole thing with the fact that, you know, a bunch of AIPAC spies got caught spying, and we're going to give them a walk.
Now they get to go free, though, don't they?
Yeah, that's what I said. They get a walk.
Yeah, no, and so Netanyahu was dictating to Obama that, oh no, you got to take care of Iran, which means what exactly?
I don't know. I don't know what it sounds like when you. You got to whack Iran, you know.
Yeah, well, no, but they're not going to have a two-state solution. I mean, that's a joke, as we both know. So, but I'm not interested in us bombing Iran because Netanyahu wants to feel safe. Is this what we're supposed to understand?
Well, feeling schmeelings. Safety is an act. Safety is something that's real and verifiable. I mean, if 3-year-old children are afraid of the monster under the bed.
Yeah, but they're like, you know, as far as I can tell, with that, they're a bit of a terror apartheid state with a whole bunch of weapons. I think everyone needs to be safe from them, as far as I can tell.
Well, that's what I keep saying, and I keep getting myself in trouble, I guess. Israel has 200 plus nuclear weapons. Iran has none. Who's the threat?
Right, no, I don't, you know, so I'm kind of done with that. But it's interesting to watch people tiptoe all around. It's like, what's going on? Anyway, listen, I've been on too long, so I'll let you continue on with the show.
Sandra, it was a delight, as it always is. Have a wonderful weekend.
Okay, you too. Bye.
All right, bye now. We just went all over with that, didn't we? I love Front Porch Friday. It's about 10 minutes past 7 o'clock here on the East Coast. We should probably take a break. And that is the new phrase. We are a resource colony. We're like a mining operation in the asteroid belt. Appalachia might as well be in the asteroid belt for the attention that we get from our elected representatives. We are, in fact... Yeah, we're a company town. This is the Horn. We'll be back.
Coltrane's run through our veins, moving monuments to better days. That mountain stands over our darkened lungs. It's time to ponder what we've become. In his company town, it's what we know. Change comes hard, change comes slow. Until the bottom falls out, that's how it goes down. Till the money's all drained from a company town. day is worked us so hard for their well-dressed children and their well-kept yards. While coal camps echoed with the mournful sounds of impoverished voices from deep in the ground under this company town. It's what we know. Change comes hard, change comes slow. Until the bottom falls out, that's how it goes down. Until the money's all drained from a company town. Round the clock was the American thing to do. Families gathered round their radios to hear FDR say we'd make it somehow in our town. Jobless faces in their grim plight, while four men at a drag line blow the mountaintop off to take its heart out. Now it knows what we've lost in this company town. It's what we know. Change comes hard, change comes slow. Until the bottom falls out, that's how it goes down. Until the money's all drained from a company town. Until the life's all drained out of a company town.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
I'm going back to the Sonia Sotomayor issue. It's not the Sonia Sotomayor issue. It's the right-wing sleaze machine issue. I'm going back to that in a minute. But I just have to throw this one out there in the middle of, in medias res. And it's well past February, but apparently George Bush popped up and didn't see his shadow recently. The former Dem leader. The man who tried to leave through a closet in China. The man who was nearly bested by a pretzel. Who nearly wet himself at the Battle of Bristol. You know. Monty Python reference there, for those keeping score. For the most part, Dem leader has managed, and I think it may be the best thing he has ever done in his miserable, misbegotten existence, has managed to keep his, maybe Babs was choking him with her pearls or something, trying to get through to him one last time that it is better to be to close one's mouth and be thought a fool than to open one's mouth and prove it. And he said at one point that President Obama, this was his quote, deserves my silence, because he said, I didn't like it when a former president criticized me, so therefore I'm not going to criticize my successor. I wish him all the best. Falling on his knees and praying every night that one drops dead. At least Joe Biden's white. But he sort of he broke his silence recently. With another of those great great moments in Bushness. He gave an interview he gave a speech, rather, not an interview. Biggest domestic speech since leaving office. And he said, people are waiting to see... back up. Among other things, he defended his TARP program, you know, the big giveaway. He defended the TARP program, the Troubled Asset Relief Program. Remember the great big socialism for Wall Street, capitalism, and all the losses attendant with it for the rest of us, the program, the bankster giveaway? In the speech, he said, I'm still a free market guy. But this is the best part. He was asked about the constant onslaught, and I bring this up because it sort of ties into what we did at beginning of the first hour of the program, late though I was. He was asked about the conservative pundits. I prefer the word morons. Who have been screaming that Barack Obama is a Marxist, a socialist, yada, yada, yada. And he said, this was the answer. I tell you, George, no more major domestic policy speeches, okay, buddy? Go back to your Game Boy. Go back to that little play school brand toy where you put the round pegs in the square holes. Please. But he said, and it's like Tom Tancredo. Remember what we had at the beginning of the program, Tom Tancredo saying in response to the query about whether or not
the Obama administration hates white people, per party leader, maximum leader, Flush Flimbaugh. Do you agree that the Obama administration hates white people? Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Well, this is the same thing, only it's coming out of the mouth of dim leader. Do you think Barack Obama is a socialist? I've heard talk about that. I think the verdict is out. I think people are waiting to see what all this means. Couldn't even come out and say no. He's free of his party. You know, a guy who has served two terms in the White House, say what you will about the success or failure of his presidency, one thing is damned well certain. He really, on, you know, January 20th of whatever year that he's not president anymore, he gets to breathe a sigh of relief and say, free at last, thank God Almighty, I'm free at last. He's free of the political pressures. He is, at that point, an elder statesman who is absolutely 100% scot-free. To be honest. And tell the party flacks and hacks to go piss up a rope. I would think it would be enervating. I would think it would be exhilarating to finally be that free. You think he's a socialist, sir? Yeah, I've heard talk about that. I think the verdict is out. I think people are waiting to see what all this means. First of all what? You mean that socialized health care plan we're not going to have? Yeah, I know. And more on that later, too, I hope. But even now, he's a walking Archie Bunker with a Texas drawl. Sorry, Texans, I know, he's not a real Texan. But he does have the phony accent. It's kind of like he stayed at a Holiday Inn Express for 8 years. I've heard all the talk about that. I think the verdict is out. I think people... No, George, you damn dummy, the verdict is not out. The jury is out. Juries make verdicts. Verdicts never come in or get... No, the jury is out on that. And no, the jury's not out, you little moron. There is not even the remotest opportunity. There is not even the remotest likelihood. Not a prayer left in any of us liberals that there is so much. What are the tiniest bones in the human body? The hammer, the anvil, and the stirrup in the ear, I think. I don't think there's even the slightest chance that the hammer, the anvil, or the stirrup of Barack Obama have one gene on one chromosome that are socialist. Not even that, no. I didn't like it when a former president criticized me, so therefore I'm not going to criticize my successor. I wish him all the best. Yeah, sure you do. Then say he's not a socialist. You know, saying that he's not a socialist might save Barack Obama's life. Because the hoppin' mad, heavily armed weirdos out there that are the remnant rump of the Repiglican Party think he is, and would prefer him dead for it. No kidding. The verdict is out. A small reminder of what a relief it is. Whatever else one says about Barack Obama, what a relief it is to know that we're not going to hear Barack Obama say, "Well, the verdict is out." Or food on families. Going back to the phone in a second, but
a quick email in from our buddy William. And for those of you dining at home, please just try to live past this. You know, I was talking about the Flush Flemball looking like a living egg yolk. And our buddy William has gone one up on me. See, you guys do this to me. You're much better with this stuff than I. You know that swill that looks like clear jello that's used to pack a cheap canned ham? The stuff that allows the can to relieve itself of what is called ham with a swooshing plop sound? Well, this is the complete content of Flush, Rush, solely contained in fleshy skin and supported by a chair with steel arms from spilling out and slithering away like a jellyfish on a slick tile floor. Any shirt he's poured into must have threads stretched to their very limits. Watch out if a seam gives out. Swoosh, plop. Get the wet dry vac out. Ew. Yeah, that gelatinous goo around a can. I remember that stuff. I remember being put off by that. Mama, that's gross. Mama, that's icky. Yeah, that's better than a living egg yolk. By far. Our buddy Mora says, I think the more fringe idiots who are speaking out, the better. Talking about GOP pundits. It's putting a really bad face on the GOP. Every time they open their mouths, we win hearts and minds. Even Senator Cornyn from Texas is trying to get them to stop. Yeah, I saw that. They'll have the long knives out for John Cornyn in Texas pretty soon. And you know what? I think Moore is right. I mean, this is good for us. I guess Aristotelian or Platonic or Epicurean. I don't know. Some sense. I just wonder why it is that the for-profit media keep giving these goobers a platform. If you want to gin up this phony debate, at least find somebody with some, you know, credibility, somebody with some scholarly justification, with some real validity to offer an opinion. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe nobody in their right mind will get out and say this stuff, so they just hire the functional equivalent of the guy who just drank a fifth of Wild Irish Rose through a straw. Namely, Tom Tancredo, Dick Cheney, Newt Gingrich, Tom DeLay, the usual suspects. Let's go to the phones and see what's cooking. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Hey, Preston, how you doing?
Doing well. I wanted to let you know I just posted something on your Facebook page.
I just saw that note.
Okay. It's about a documentary about the phenomenon of pro wrestling, and it's titled Wrestling with Manhood, Bullying, and Battering. And it goes into, well, first, how hugely popular it is. And I'm sure, you know, people in your audience and all kinds of good people have checked it out and gotten something out of it. But, you know, as with so many things, this documentary just encourages critical thinking as we're viewing these things. And they talk about some of the really negative aspects of some of it, the sexism, the hyper-aggressive posturing, a whole bunch of things. A definition of manhood as being tough and dominating. It's the dominator narrative in so many ways. And they kind of get away with it with, well, it's just entertainment. That's their cover. And that's a cover for Limbaugh regularly as well. When you challenge the ditto heads, eventually, oftentimes they'll fall back on, well, he's just an entertainer. No, that's not going to work. In the movie they say, you know, if we accept that argument that this is entertainment, well, maybe we should ask ourselves, why do we find it entertaining that women are being dominated? You know, people are being abused, mocked, and you know, just it's kind of an ugly.
And that is such a valid inquiry. It's a deep one too, Preston, because whether it's wrestling, you know, I got to tell you, from time to time, when it's not children's programming on the television, I walk into the living room and lo and behold, Ultimate Fighting is on. And I recoil from it as if, you know, because I know that I'm watching something essentially bad. Do I extend the same opprobrium to a martial arts demonstration? No, not really, because there's not an intent to, you know, really do harm to another human being.
Avoiding it is emphasized, you know,
right.
Being physical. Okay, but yeah, you're right. But even when they go through the motions of battle, there's, again, it's a totally different spirit to it. You know, they're not seeking to draw blood and be disrespectful. You know, they're bowing down to each other and things like that. It's kind of like what I was getting to in an earlier conversation, Indian warfare. It was very much ritualized.
Stylized, if you will, yes.
Yes, yes. We're kind of the fundamentalists when it's coming to this stuff,
but that's also our heritage, and it is a line, Preston, that extends from the Roman Circus Maximus. You know, a lot of people think that the gladiatorial combats and stuff were had in the Flavian Amphitheater, what we call the Colosseum. No, it all started in the Circus Maximus. The blood and circuses, literally, or bread and circuses, for which Rome is remembered. But it's a line that starts there, and extends through the Middle Ages. At one point, I can't remember which English king or maybe French king. I'm sure Eugene Finnerman could tell me, you know, like that. Which reminds me, there's something from Eugene that needs to be gone into this evening. But one of the medieval kings had to, I believe, ban jousting because all of his knights were getting killed at the sport.
Okay.
And people, you know, gathered together because it was great, good fun. It was, you know, it was entertainment. You know, your festival of Holy, you know, your Holy Mother Church festival feast day. So you'll have a joust and make sure, you know, a few people get killed. Those people who remember the movie or the play of Camelot, you know, there's that scene where, you know, one of the miraculous healing or something, and Lancelot thought he'd killed somebody, all that stuff. You know. But that really happened, and the various armies of Europe that were needed to go and slaughter each other were slaughtering each other one subset down, you know, among their own kind, and that line then extends upward and onward. Until it becomes ritualized and becomes stuff like what the rest of the world calls football, we call soccer, lacrosse, field hockey, cricket. Cricket bats are scary things. Baseball over here, Lord knows, yeah. American gladiators. It's a continuum, and it's a very real one. And boxing, you know, the Marquess of Queensbury rules. I mean, that's the thing. That's the difference between, and I'm not trying to make a justification, but that's the difference between, say, boxing, which really does go by very, again, formal, stylized rules. And you only get the headgear only comes off in the upper ranks of the professional stuff. If you watch for instance, boxing at the Olympics, there's headgear and protective stuff.
Yeah.
The gloves are different. You know, the gloves don't have a roll of quarters in them. I'm being sarcastic.
There are only like there are fewer rounds too, I think, aren't there?
It's a point system, and it's all based on decision. But you get to something like Ultimate Fighting, and it really is fighting for fighting's sake. It is blood sport.
Yeah.
And it is legitimate. It's legitimate to make inquiries into this kind of thing, and why it is we're fascinated with it, and why it, and what kind of mindset enjoys it. I hesitate to say this, but I had some guys who are big NASCAR fans the other night said, "Hey, look, 99% of the people in them stands are there to see the wreck.
I was going to get to that. You know, it's part of that lineage. That's harkens back to the chariot races. And there's the NASCAR stuff. And people get titillated if there's a big wreck. And then we watch it, the highlights on, you know, on the sports shows and see it in slow-mo. And, you know, there's something about that that, you know, I think sometimes people are just really bored with their lives and just see something spectacular.
Well, and there's, and
spectacular, but just a, you know.
Yeah, and there's also a vicarious thing that goes back to some there. You know, theater had been a very stylized thing until the likes of Euripides and those guys came along, and they started adding characters to the chorus. No, I'm good.
Is your phone going out?
No, it's fine. Are you not hearing me?
Yeah, you're kind of going out, completely disappearing in bits and pieces.
Oh, no, all of our connections here are showing solid for a change.
Okay.
But
I can hear you now.
Okay.
But the
whole point was that, you know, theories were developed by the ancient Greeks, Aristotle and the like, about why people back then enjoyed the Greek tragedies. Everybody knew how the stories ended. You know.
And I see it in myself in some ways. Especially as I reflect back on stuff that I was drawn to for whatever reason. You know, I think there are other factors also that pull people to these things that go beyond what's going on in the arena. It's a collective action that people get together, or the son gets to go out with the father and be with dad for a while, and if it means going to this arena, okay. And people are always being marketed this stuff very heavily, like, you know, if you're a good dad, you'll take Junior to
the ball game,
family fun, pro wrestling, yeah, all that stuff.
Monster truck rally.
Teach them how to worship, you know, idolize the gladiators. So there is a continuation, but it is heavily marketed, and a lot of effort goes into creating this. So, you know, I think that goes to, you know, is this stuff really in our nature, or is it what's being encouraged by powerful elite?
Well, and that's what the ancients inquired into, Preston, because you know, they formulated theories about you know, the word catharsis is a Greek word, and it's what happens when we watch something and we get a vicarious experience out of it, and then we take a breath and go, whew, thank God it wasn't us.
Mm.
And it can be that, whether it's the gladiator in the Circus Maximus, or you know, some NASCAR driver doing 18 360s down the track, getting hit and being binged around the asphalt like a pinball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the same time that we're screaming, we're also going, hey, we're here, he's there, lucky us.
You know, this stuff is just becoming more and more incongruous with society in general, though. I mean, for instance, this $50 million that they're planning on investing in a NASCAR track, you know, it's just totally out of place with the rest of so much of this town's discussion. We're talking about green jobs. We're talking about car sharing. We're talking about mass solar powered wind. Not creating, you know, laying down this asphalt so these demigods can, you know, zoom around in circles and when, you know, just... The whole thing, as far as it is theater, it's a bad play. And we've had 2,000 years of this crap, and move on. But again, let me just
ask, Preston, if my suspicions are correct, the model for that track will, of course, be that taxpayers in Denver and more widely Colorado will be on the hook for it, right?
Oh, yeah. This is corporate welfare, as clear as can be. There's two companies now fighting over this, you know, this bounty being offered up, you know, and, you know, the rationalizations are always, well, we'll bring tourists here and it will, you know, create some sort of job. Nothing you'd want, nothing you'd be proud of or, you know, grow in, but yeah, you'll get some, you know, $7 an hour, maybe no benefits or something. Selling cotton candy, you know, to rot out the kids' teeth or whatever.
Right.
You know, that's another thing. Our soldiers who are being encouraged to hand out candy to the kids, Really, no.
Yeah, can we not do some fruit leather or something?
Yeah, right, right.
And maybe that's a little micro in the grand scheme of things, but I really don't think it is. How about some natural fruit juice gummy bears?
Right. It's not that we've, planted cluster bombs and depleted uranium and all that and poisoned their water, but it is another assault on their health. And it's like a PR thing that the military propagandists like to put out there a lot. So,
well, there was a push on that I really did respect earlier. Cassie and Betsy made me aware of it. There was the soldiers, I guess, in Afghanistan are also some of them put out a call saying, "Can you please send us, little round-tipped scissors? Can you send us glue? Can you send us construction paper, pencils, pens,
yeah,
notebooks?" Because those were being cherished by the children to whom it was given.
Yep. And again, that's how this changes. That's how things transform. Just have this other option to people. Okay, people might get excited about sending candy to the troops right now. Suggest something this, and I think they'll gravitate towards that. I think that kind of stuff is really more to our nature. And again, people might be getting into NASCAR right now, but encourage them to go to the Green Festival. Maybe encourage our government officials to invest $50 million on facilitating future Green Festivals. We could get tourists. That would create jobs. All the same channels could be there, except to something progressive, something helpful.
And something fun. In talking about all this vicarious the violence and so forth, you remind me also that I think that we do a disservice if we talk about this and we don't take into account the other side of the coin, so to speak. Look at the reality televisions, television programs that are dedicated to reinforcing female body image. Or failures thereof.
Yep.
America's Next Top Model.
Mm-hmm.
Or The Biggest Loser. That one really drives me crazy. Mm-hmm. Dancing with the Stars, where the motto is more glitter.
Or do you
because it's because
how, what's the Howie Mandel one? Deal No Deal.
Yeah, Deal or No Deal. Right.
20 women on display in their high heels to open the briefcase. It's sick also. But
all of this, I think, is predicated on making sure that an audience understands that they are different and either better or worse off. And I find that repulsive. I'm not going to sit here and engage in some level of holier-than-thou-ness. Because I sit down and watch a basketball game. I sit down and watch football games. I participate vicariously,
yeah,
and I get that vicarious thrill. I have danced around burning couches in the streets of Morgantown, West Virginia, in my misspent youth.
Well, you might have to attend Burning Man someday.
Oh, well, yeah, would not.
That?
Yeah.
So again, it is burning couches, burning stuff around fires, that getting primal in a way. It can, in the right context, be useful. Yeah, I understand. I understand it.
But I think it's a felony to burn a couch in Morgantown now. The officials clamped right down on that stuff.
Yeah. And it's probably releasing some toxins or something. Who knows?
Well, yeah. When you set fire to foam rubber, bad things enter the atmosphere.
Right. But as far as sports go, I think badminton's more my speed these days. And on the Ultimate Fighting, I want to make another point. There's a person involved with that, a really famous one, who almost won some championship. His name is something like, has something to do with snowball or something. And it turns out he's this big Noam Chomsky reader and an anarchist studying anarchy.
Oh, no kidding.
And no. If I find his name, I'll send it to you. But a really interesting guy for sure. So again, that's another. You know, I want to be careful about not condemning things or being completely judgmental, because I know of my own involvement, past or present, and I know of just all these intriguing people within these systems and things that I don't like necessarily, but people within them are cool. Like the military can't stand, you know, the institution and the goals, the missions of our military, but within it, there's all kinds of interesting people and, you know, people that we can reach out to.
People of compassion, people of dedication, people of essential, fundamental, basic goodness. But in many ways it requires that disconnect that I talk about from time to time, Preston, where we have to compartmentalize ourselves and what we do for 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
We do, and then we sort of try to shelve it away and not take it out and look at it during the other 16, so that we could stand to get through the other 16.
Right.
So, and you know, you mentioning the military reminds me of something. Our buddy David in Tennessee sent me a story from a radio broadcast yesterday. Did you hear Campbell, Kentucky being absolutely shut down?
For Campbell in Kentucky?
Yeah.
What?
You know, it's a huge military base. It's an army base. I guess Brigadier General in charge of it, shut it down because, they're having a soldier a week commit suicide.
Right. And again, I think that's because of what we're asking them to do is so contrary to human nature. It's so disturbing them that they're taking their lives. Howard Zinn, you know, he's a World War II veteran himself, really well known for his book, A People's History of the United States.
Yes.
Which has changed the consciousness of a big chunk of this country. Over 1.7 million copies have sold, and it's one of those books that continues to sell even more as the years go by. But he has another book called Declarations of Independence, Cross-Examining American Ideology. And within that, he has an essay on violence and fear. And I would just highly recommend, if you get a chance, he talks about this exchange between Sigmund Freud and Albert Einstein on, you know, the nature of people, and you know, examines different indigenous cultures, and you know, talks about characteristics, you know, those that were pacific and the cooperative versus those that were more aggressive, and what were some of the factors involved in the circumstances. Really interesting stuff. But anyway.
Well, and by the way, you have generated some email. We've heard talking about these vicarious shows and reality shows and such forth, Juanita has written in, and she says, the doctor's shows bother me in that they show the various new cures, but we the people can't afford them. And she's right. Even things like, and I think it's Albert who has laughingly mentioned, the Discovery Channel, you know, the volcano could erupt tomorrow and the tsunami would wipe out Miami. You know, where we can't talk about science in terms of hopefulness, but rather talk about it in terms of impending disaster. And the medicine shows that Juanita's talking about, those are big teases in a way. Because you know that in our for-profit healthcare system, it's not going to be available to you and me or to Juanita or folks in the Horn family. It's not going to be made available.
Sometimes it's criminalized. You know, some of the, you know, herbal practices are against the law for sure. And then, you know, midwives don't have a big marketing arm. And And, you know, but the private hospitals, you know, they've got their system, kind of these, you know, kind of a conveyor belt of, you know, urging women to have babies their way in a particular time frame. The cesarean sections have become really popular recently because it's more efficient, and it's causing all kinds of problems, by the way, infections and stuff. But, yeah, the profit motive is affecting sentimental as human birth. There's actually a really good documentary about it called The Business of Being Born, and I was delighted to see it played on, I think, HBO a couple weeks ago. I mean, radical stuff, radical analysis. Again, doesn't mean that people have had babies in conventional ways. I'm sure it was a magical experience, but still, just applying mindfulness to that experience, and can it even be more joyful? And it has a lot of footage of these women, these natural births with midwives, and wow.
Yeah, you remind. You know, I was present for all of our children's birth. And the first time through, I said, you know, my job is not to be in that delivery room. My job is to be in a bar across the street. I'm a guy.
Right.
But it was a magical experience. And I'll never forget, this is just a little sidebar, the night that my wife was giving birth to our youngest and just heard these blood-curdling screams coming down the hallway. And, you know, my wife was kind of a pro at this by now. I mean, I remember when my son was born, we looked at our obstetrician, and I said, you know, good job, Doc. He says, oh, hell no, your wife's the good one. I'm just catching. And so Doodle was getting ready to come along. This would be about 12 years ago. And these blood-curdling screams are coming down the hallway, and my wife, being a concerned human being, looks at her nurse and says, my heavenly days, is she okay? And the nurse said, yeah, this is just her first. She's dilated to one. And my wife said, you go down the hall and tell her if she hollers like that again, I'm getting up out of this bed and I'm going to come strangle her. Yeah, because you know, it's just that concept, because
yeah
my wife makes jokes about the fact that there's a segment of the American population, American women, for whom natural child is giving birth without mascara on.
Well,
but you're right. There are ways to go about it, and that must be an excellent documentary, because again, it's marginalizing the sum total of human knowledge in many ways, because and the opposite of that is, of course, I don't know if you've ever seen Monty Python's Meaning of Life, but there's you know, it goes through these segments of the life of you know, life, and one of the first ones is birth, and it's the Monty Python crew in a delivery room, and the administrator walks in, played of course impeccably by John Cleese, and he says, "Ah, I see that you've got a machine that goes ping."
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yes, we did. It cost several million pounds, but we were able to lease it and then engage in a buyback with the hospital corporation for $1 a year, and thereby get a write off on our taxes, and it's absolutely marvelous. What's it do? Don't know.
Oh wow. Ahead of its time, that's great.
You know, and this is, you know, the late 70s, early 80s, when the machine that goes ping, and of course the baby's born, and the doctor says, all right, now get it to the fetus frightener.
And, oh my gosh.
And that was their genius, it really was. But
it is. And it's insight, and... But to that documentary as well, it does cover, I mean, there's the magic of women giving birth and all that stuff, but there's also this real problem we need to face. In fact, in the U.S., more women are dying while having birth than typically, say, in Europe, you know? And complications are huge. And so there's... You know, we have to look critically at this stuff to overcome these unnecessary threats, and also maybe even a degree of unnecessary pain that you were talking about, that blood-curdling scream. You know, there's something going on when they're putting Pitocin, I think it's called Pitocin, to
Yeah, that's the stuff that makes the dot, yeah.
Okay, well then, it creates this other issue of either maybe like not blocking a hormone release or something like that. You know, there's this complicated relation in the body going on that Pitocin may be, you know, may not be the best approach, or there could be other options. Again, that we don't have to have some big expensive insurance policy for, we don't have to go to Eli Lilly for, that exist in nature.
Well, see, that's the thing. We have 2.5 million years of arguably human evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And in that 2.5 million years, women have given birth without the aid of corporations for the biggest part of them. Now, that is not in any way to minimize the profound danger that women go through in the birth process.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I think, an appropriate point, Preston, to remember that the United States has a maternal death rate higher than that of Cuba. And roughly equivalent to that of Iran.
Okay.
And that is what corporate medicine has bought us. And for those who are going to be around a TV this weekend, this is worth mentioning as well. One of the nastiest things to come along in a long time is going to be on TV this weekend. And it is coming from a front group, you know, one of these AstroTurf groups, called Conservatives for Patients' Rights. They've got a 30-minute documentary that is chock-a-block with horror stories to make people think that a publicly funded healthcare plan is just an anti-American nightmare.
A misinfomercial.
Yeah, and it all comes. This is the height of the irony. It all comes. The group's leader and the guy who writes the checks for the organization is a private healthcare executive by the name of Rick Scott. And Rick Scott is the man who is credited with having reinvented healthcare in America and turning it into its current for-profit-only self via, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think via the HCA brand label. Healthcare Corporation of America, in which the Frist family of Tennessee was heavily invested.
I was just going to ask you that. Wasn't Bill Frist's father into that? Or
yeah,
I'm sure Bill is now.
You know, this is the same corporation that was guilty of the single largest bust for Medicare fraud in the entire history of the program. They were, and I'm sure that they got a bargain on this, because of when it happened, but HCA was forced to cough up $1.7 billion with a B dollars in settlement of the fraud that they perpetrated on the system. And see, that's the way for-profit healthcare works. If you can get away with it, you defraud the public system so that you're engaging in essential wealth transfer from the public sector to the private sector in order to enhance the bottom line and the shareholder returns and the CEO salaries and the lobster lunches for people who are, among other things, not doctors, who are not health care providers. And I think that's one of the things that drives me craziest, Preston. We're not talking about we're not talking about rewarding really good doctors via a for-profit healthcare system.
Or hospice workers, you know.
Right. They, you know, the doctors make okay money, but after that, there's a significant drop off from the doctor to the RN, and from the RN to the LPN, and from the LPN to the certified nursing assistant, or to the people in radiology who do X-rays or CAT scans or MRIs, or, you know, from the doctor to the physician's assistant. There is a huge drop-off.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no drop-off. There's no drop-off for the CEO. There's no drop-off between of any real consequence between the CEO and the first executive chief vice president of financial operations.
Yep. I saw some graffiti I think in Argentina, it said something like, redistribute the wealth already. And that's what we need to do. I mean, enough with these stories about how tough things are while, you know, these people are living like royalty. You know, that's...
Well, yeah, I will be in Washington, D.C. Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. I hope I get a chance to chat briefly with Dr. Dean, because right now he's really at the forefront of this push for a public health care plan, you know, something approaching single-payer at the very least. And you know, the question that I have, not necessarily for him, but maybe a way to frame this in light of recent economic downturns and so forth, is we can't trust Wall Street with our money. Why in God's name do we trust them with our lives or of those that we love?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Because that's what we're doing. As long as we remain in a for-profit healthcare system, Preston, we are literally entrusting the lives of those we most love to people whose first concern is making a buck.
Yeah, yeah. And there again, I think within this rotten institution, there are people who are trying to do good work. And then there's this whole issue of people's fear about changing the system. If you change the system, then what do insurance salespeople and copywriters and all that, what are they going to do? That's their livelihood. So you've got that pull, you know, people sticking with this. So alternative vision, which is people can have careers in herbalism. And quickly back to the midwife thing and herbalists and all that. It's important to remember the history of these figures as well. These were the people that were branded witches in Europe and crucified.
Yes.
So that's put in the Iron Maiden.
Burned.
You know,
drowned.
Dunked. Yeah, if they sink, they weren't witches. But if they float, you know, raped, their land taken. And, you know, so oftentimes we recognize the sufferings, as we should, of, you know, people of color, African American slavery, the Native American genocide, but there's a European Holocaust that.
I've argued from time to time on this program that every person of white European ancestry, somewhere in their background, has some degree of kinship to a person who was tormented in the name of Christ Jesus by the Roman Catholic Church.
Yeah.
And as time went forward, let's be fair about this. The Protestants burned their fair share too. You know what? By the way, you know why they burned and drowned and so forth? You know why the churches did that?
No.
You're going to love this, because they felt it was church policy that Jesus Christ, who loved us all and died for us on the cross. It was church policy that his teachings forbade us from shedding blood, or forbade the church from shedding blood.
Okay.
So the church had to come up with ways of killing people that didn't overtly shed blood, and hence you get burning at the stake and drowning. Doesn't it just blow your mind?
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
You can boil the blood, you just can't shed it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just wow.
Yeah. Wanted to mention, back to kind of restorative things and healing things. Found a book recently called Bringing Nature Home. How to Sustain Wildlife with Native Plants. And a guy from the University of Delaware. And fortunately, he was interviewed last week on NPR, their show Science Friday. And he talked about, you know, what plants and bushes are appropriate, talked about beneficial bugs and, you know, the moths that some states have invested so much money in destroying were the food for the birds. And, you know, he talked about amphibians, the frogs and the salamanders, and the important things they do, and how you can get bees and how you can make little refuges for them in our backyards, in our front yards for that matter, and what are good trees to plant in particular regions. He's a big fan of oak trees and along the East Coast there. And but before I knew he was coming on, and I was curious, so I went to his book site on Amazon, and I noticed it was selling around 7,000 in the Amazon rank. And shortly after the interview, it had gone up to around 200 on Amazon. So I was just really pleased to see how this guy, you know, first he has that big platform. NPR's had pretty big growth over the past 10 years. And on top of that, his book is just flying out there now. And so it's fun to see. And NPR certainly has lots of flaws, too. I agree with a lot of your criticisms.
Yeah, but it's still, it's as far as news is concerned, it's about all there is left.
Yeah, and it's so much better than, you know, Rush Limbaugh and Michael Savage and that whole.
And to be fair, it's also better than most of the stuff that's offered as straight news. You know, ABC Network News. I'm Ding Dungan. And you get you get 2.5 minutes of 15-second blips, and at the end, a kicker. And a puppy was rescued today in Texas. ABC News.
Yep. And the NPR also has, you know, created the opportunities for really incredible stuff like This American Life. I don't know if you ever caught that program.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
Okay, me too. And there's a daily one, daily show called The World, which looks at...
Yeah, that's a joint production of, what is it? It used to be American Public Radio, but now it's something else, and the BBC.
Okay. PRI? Maybe?
Yes. PRI and the BBC. Bring you the world! Yeah.
And this is another example. This is more evidence of what I was speaking to before regarding Rush Limbaugh and the others having a crisis of confidence or of credibility. They are saying the same, they're saying this migration of people to other sources, NPR being one of them, other sources of information. Hey, I mean, it's pathetic. Limbaugh literally tells people, don't listen to other people. I mean, right there. I mean, enough people have enough critical thought to say, why is he telling me not to look at anything else? How strange. And, and they're finding other things. And, you know, Democracy Now!, I thought it was 500 stations they were on, but now it's 700 stations, last I heard. So, and then all these little important efforts I'm finding out through other people. One of your listeners, Nick Regalado?
Yeah. The Coalfield Kingsnake, yeah.
Okay. Now, obviously, I'm not going to make this event, but just knowing that these things are taking place all over the country all the time is great. And what he sent me a link on was the Mountain Aid Music Festival.
Yes.
Okay. And lots of musicians and stuff getting together to raise funds to move Marsh Fork Elementary or create a new school. Is that right?
So to try to make that possible. Yes.
Okay, so they're not living, you know, going to school underneath that giant sludge pond. And
not breathing that filth day in and day out.
Yeah. Yeah. So it just lifts my spirits to see. And I guess Kathy Mateo is going to be there. And so it's good to see more of this stuff going on. And
yeah, that should be pretty huge. And just for people who want to know, Mountain Aid Music Festival, music to end mountaintop removal and create a clean energy future. It will be Friday, June the 19th at 7 p.m. It will, that's the start. It will end Sunday, June the 21st at 12 p.m. at Shikori Hills in Chatham County, North Carolina. And it's going to be something. I don't know how I'm going to get there at this late date. I'd love to get down there and broadcast it. We're going to be doing something like that on a much on a significantly smaller scale in August in Charleston. There's going to be a concert to kick off, I believe, the latest Moving Mountains CD. You may have heard that song I played earlier. That comes from the first Moving Mountains disc. There's another one coming out, and there will be a concert in support of that, and we will broadcast that to the world.
Great.
And I don't know if there's anybody out there that could that would be interested in having that thing broadcast, but wow, would I love to. Because I think that's, you know, that's the kind of stuff that we keep saying the horn was born for. Of course, the question becomes one of whether or not Shikori Hills has viable internet connectivity. And, of course, then also I believe I haven't heard anything to the contrary. Around the 4th of July weekend, I expect the Mountain Keepers Music Festival to take place at Cayford Mountain, as it has for the last couple of years. Had a great opportunity to meet some members of the Horn family who traveled to that last year, and I hope to meet more this year. I'll have to look into that and find out a little bit more. But that, you know, it's a great way to leverage the because there's not a lot of great music out there in support of the ongoing rape of the Appalachian resource colony.
Mm-hmm.
Even that door busting country act Big and Rich. One of them is an avowed opponent of mountain removal, while the other one is an avowed proponent of you know, right-wing corporatized America.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
So,
I wonder if they both feel free to and get opportunities to share their...
Well, at one point, there was a documentary in the making. That I was asked about last fall. I don't know what happened to it. It may have morphed into something like this. I'm not entirely sure. But yeah, they don't shy away from espousing their views. I guess they just put it all aside when the lights go up.
Hmm. Wow. Did you ever see that documentary on the Dixie Chicks, Shut Up and Sing?
Yes.
I thought that was really well done. And, again, just the whole energy to the right wing for them to attack their opponent like that, just amazing. Sad. But, they endured, you know, bless their hearts. And I guess they're going to have something else coming out here in the next year or so. And,
Well, there's, you know, as you well know, there is a ton of great music out there that never makes it to hot country radio.
Right, right.
And in fact, Hank Williams III has, I believe, a song about exactly that. If I'm not, I think it's Hank III. It's got a lot of dirty words in it, wherein he expresses his disdain for what is called hot country.
Yeah, you know, it's not getting out there, but we, you know, there are people sharing CDs and MP3s, and there's YouTube stuff now, YouTube opportunities, MySpace. I've been finding incredible stuff on MySpace. Certainly lots of, you know, indie bands of all sorts, but then over the past couple of years, finding progressive hip-hop in Latin America, and there's this one guy named Akil Lamar. He's been kind of compared to like a Tupac of Mexico, and more recently there's this trio of women, and they've got a group called something like Actitude Maria Marta. It's like Attitude Maria Marta. Oh my gosh. They are phenomenal. I don't understand a lot of Spanish. I think I know about 15% or so of what's going on, but you don't really need to know the particular word.
Well, that's why I love that song I played last night by Molotov, Frijolero, because it's sort of a mishmash of English and Spanish, and you can get the meaning real quick.
Okay, I missed that.
Awesome song. And an awesome musicianship of the band is just amazing. And, of course, I would be remiss in not mentioning Los Lobos, because that band is musically beyond excellent, and they have spoken up for the Hispanic experience and working people's realities for years profoundly, beautifully, stunningly musicality and lyrics that'll just set you on your ear. I heard a song the other day as we were coming home from Beckley by Los Lobos, and in fact, I think it was on BBC's The World or some such by Los Lobos about a woman working behind a sewing machine for 15 years and just having her hands ruined. I know it doesn't sound particularly scintillating, but it was gorgeous, and you couldn't listen to it and not think. And at the the best of art is the art that you enjoy while it's happening, and then you go back and you wait a minute.
Yeah.
And you find more in it.
You kind of grow into it. Or I know just what you mean. In fact, Los Lobos, they were kind of an early influence on my musical interests. I remember buying their CD, Will the Wolf Survive? That was kind of their breakthrough CD. And, it was so different from, I think at the time I was living in Omaha, Nebraska. And there, I had like one pop music station to listen to and a lot of kind of emotionally manipulative stuff and very focused on, particular aspects of human being, But, Los Lobos, I picked that up and spread my musical horizons quite a bit. And but even that pop station, there was someone at that station who put on the Indigo Girls, Closer to Fine, song like that. And it's like, and that's, a lot of people have been following that band for a long time and have seen their music and their politics. And it's great political music didn't just live and die in the 60s. It's very much going on today. I think it's actually much...
Yeah, it's just that corporately owned radio wants to distance itself and make sure... And they would prefer that if it would just... They would prefer if it would just die on the vine. But the new music paradigms and the new experience paradigms is really what they are ensuring great... young acts can continue on. I don't think I have ever heard, with the exception of when I played it as bumper music on terrestrial radio in Beckley, I don't think I've ever heard the drive-by truckers on a terrestrial station that is commercial in nature and owned by Clear Channel or some such. And that's why I love playing them here, so that people can get exposed to them. Folks like Will Kimbrough or Jason Isbell. I played that an incredibly hopeful, beautiful song of his last night, however long. And, I hear that and I get tingles up my spine. It's just extraordinary. And it's a matter of finding it and keeping up with it. Hey, Preston, I got to roll on, brother, but this has been a great conversation.
Good. You bet. I really enjoyed it.
All right.
And good night, everybody. Bye-bye.
Take care, Preston. Always have such wonderful wide range of conversations with Preston. Let's see, just for the fun of it, here's what I was referencing a little bit ago in talking about corporate medicine. Everybody needs a giggle once in a while.
Part one, the miracle of birth.
pregnant woman head first being shoved through swinging doors.
1,008.
Mrs. Moore's contractions are more frequent, Doctor.
Good. Take her into the fetus frightening room.
Right.
By the way, I've been corrected. John Cleese is on the medical team. The accountant is Michael Palin.
Well, that's bearing it, there, isn't it? Yes. Yes. More apparatus, please, nurse.
The EEG, the BP monitor, and the AVV.
Yes, certainly, Doctor.
And get the machine that goes ding.
And get the most expensive machines in case the administrator comes.
Get over here.
Come along. Hello. Now, don't you worry.
We'll soon have you cured.
Leave it all to us. You'll never know what hit you.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Trips up.
Injections.
Can I put the tube in the baby's head?
Only if I can do the episiotomy.
Okay.
There you go. Legs up. Come in. Come on, Norio. That's it. Jolly good. Come on. Come on. Spread around there. Who are you? Sorry. Only people involved are allowed in here.
Right. What do I do?
Yes?
What do I do?
Nothing, dear. You're not qualified.
Leave it to us.
What's that for?
That's the machine that goes bing.
Bing.
You see, that means your baby is still alive.
And that's the most expensive machine in the whole hospital.
Yes, it cost over £750,000.
Aren't you lucky?
The administrator is here, Doctor.
Switch everything on.
Switch everything on, Jesus.
Oh, very impressive, very impressive. And what are you doing this morning?
It's a birth. Ah, what sort of thing is that? Well, that's when we take a new baby out of a lady's tummy.
Wonderful thing to do nowadays. Ah, I see you have the machine that goes bing. This is my favorite. You see, we leased this back from the company we sold it to, and that way it comes under the monthly current budget and not the capital account. Thank you, thank you. We try to do our best. Well, do carry on.
Oh, the bulb is dilating, Doctor.
Oh, yes, there's the head. Yes, 4 centimeters, 5, 6 centimeters.
Lights!
Amplify the ping machine.
Masks up.
Suction.
Eyes down for a full house. Here it comes. And threatening. Here. And the rough toes.
Search, mother. That's enough.
Show it to the mother. That's enough. You know, this is early 80s. You never know where you're going to find your prophecy, do you? Yes, we sold it back to the company we bought it from, and we leased it, and it comes off of the monthly expenditures instead of the capital accounts. That's what you're going to see Sunday, with the horror movie about healthcare that's not for profit. Amazing that this is going to be shown.
Animal, a for-profit mega chain, its charming young CEO, Rick Scott, promised explosive growth.
Columbia was trying to maximize profits.
Rick Scott could be ruthless.
Columbia HCA putting profits ahead of patients.
Who is Rick Scott, after all?
There is a healthcare crisis in America today. 14,000 people are losing their healthcare every day. Businesses and families are struggling to cope with skyrocketing costs, and we are all paying more. Right now, a debate is underway. Should we reform our healthcare system or keep the broken status quo? The leader of the forces blocking reform is Rick Scott, a once powerful healthcare executive who opposed healthcare reform and built the Columbia healthcare empire during the 1990s and was forced to resign in disgrace. Scott's company was charged with fraud, but even worse were the horror stories that came to light about abuse and negligence in the hospitals that he ran. Rick Scott ran his hospitals like AIG would. Pursue profits at all costs, never mind the consequences for regular people. Today, that same right-wing ideology is driving Rick Scott's efforts to kill healthcare reform once again. Now that he's back, Americans deserve to know, who is Rick Scott, and what does he want to do to our healthcare system?
Quality, cost-effective healthcare that you deserve.
As a company, Columbia was a brand new animal. A for-profit megachain, its charming young CEO, Rick Scott, promised explosive growth to shareholders and low-cost quality care to patients. But to insiders, Rick Scott could be ruthless.
Scott sought to turn his hospitals into the McDonald's of the healthcare industry.
Out of the front lines of healthcare is Columbia HCA putting profits ahead of patients.
One tactic Scott's company employed, for example, was to buy out all of the hospitals in one community and shut them all down but one.
Just 8 months after Columbia bought the hospitals, it would abruptly begin the process of closing Destin.
So what was going on? Columbia was trying to maximize profits.
The methods employed by Rick Scott's companies did cut costs, but they also threatened patients' care, choices, and safety. Doctors complained about cheap medical equipment. Nursing staffs were downsized. One nurse was forced to care for 7 sick infants. And one report called a Columbia-owned hospital, quote, just plain dirty.
See, we've been down this road, haven't we? Do you remember when we covered the nursing strike? And we talked about the hours that and patient care issues that are attendant upon modern for-profit health care, where one nurse will attend not 7 babies, but 7 full, you can have one nurse attending 7 people who are cardiac patients, any one of whom could code at a moment's notice. And if one goes, if one codes, the rest of the 6 go, we're busy with the guy who just coded. This is a broken system. Yeah, Rick Scott on one end, on the Columbia end, and the Frist family on the HCA end. And they joined together in something, the McDonald's of healthcare? Yeah, meaning that they want the same healthcare everywhere. They want it to be universal. They want it to be little C Catholic. They want it to be ubiquitous. And it was all for nothing more than profit. You know, there is a reason that the very word hospital arises out of charity. You know, in the Middle Ages, around the time of the Crusades, there were two huge crusading groups. There was one that we are more familiar with called the Knights Templars. Crusader monks, literally. Then there were also the Knights of St. John, who were called the Hospitallers. And that's where that word begins to gain traction inside the language. And it is out of charity-based healthcare and care for wounded warriors that the idea of the hospital develops. It didn't develop as a profit motivated experience. It began out of a recognition that you can't just leave sick people laying around to get the rest of the culture sick. You know, oddly enough, for Western Europe, if there is anything to be said for value coming from the Crusades, it is that when ignorant, stupid, illiterate, filthy Western Europe attacked civilized Islam, They actually learned a little bit about how you treat illness and disease. And, you know, for instance, not keeping your sick, wounded people in the same room with the pigs and the pig poo, or cows, or sheep, or goats, and their attendant the output, tended to, and you got to understand, this was revolutionary to white Western Europeans. Not having hurt people with, like, open wounds around filth. You know, Preston mentioned a little bit ago midwives being burned at the stake. There were people burned at the stake by the Holy Church, be it Protestant or Roman Catholic. There were people burned at the stake for suggesting that a good way to avoid disease was to bathe. Oh, those Gandhi, I love him so much. I like your Christ. I do not like your Christians. They are so unlike your Christ. Healthcare was never developed and never intended to be a profit vehicle. Now, granted, you've got to have people who understand finance. You've got to have people who understand money, the purchasing and leasing and the supplying of medical facilities. You've got to have those people. You've also got to have maintenance and janitorial staff. But we have now a healthcare system in this country that has been absolutely turned on its ear, where the healthcare notion is a vehicle that serves as a life support system for the making of money. And it's just wrong. It is immoral, and as has been proven time and time again in the current modern history, it is disastrous both for the profiteers, ultimately, and most assuredly for the people receiving care, and most certainly for the people giving that care. The facility was just plain dirty. Well, you know what? If it, and see, I come back to this again and again and again, and maybe I'm like a broken record. Maybe you're sick of hearing it. But dirty within a hospital, you and I go, ah! You know, I remember when a hospital here in West Virginia had to shut down its cardiac unit because it had a massive fly hatch in its OR. No, really. You know, not the flesh-eating bacteria, the stuff that plagues hospitals. Just, you know, flies. Blech. You know, because you know where flies come from. Well, see, if you're involved in a for-profit hospital, then fly hatches and filthy hallways and dirty floors don't matter. Because somewhere within your structure, you have a for-profit accountant who says, yeah, but if we order one less case of sterilizing, sanitizing solution per department per month, that's going to mean a penny a share profit for the shareholders. And it ain't no way to run a railroad. And we're actually debating this? Well, we're debating this because of people like Rick Scott. This video that's going to run Sunday, done by former CNN reporter Gene Randall. I'm Gene Randall. And he interviews patients who warn, and the whole thing warns of a government takeover of our for-profit healthcare system. You know, we can't get a government. I want a government takeover of our healthcare system, but we damned well can't get one because of people like Democrat Max Baucus. By the way, what else has Gene Randall done? This is where this, just so you'll know, if somebody brings it, yeah, I seen this video on Sunday, and I don't want none of that communist medicine, you've got to be armed for that conversation. Gene Randall, who did this thing.
Gene Randall, CNN.
He started a, PR media flack firm that basically carries water for the for-profit health insurance industry. They've also taken some money from Chevron, Gene Randall has, in the wake of Chevron being busted for dumping 18 billion gallons of toxic wastewater into the rainforest in, hey, wait a minute, a resource colony? Yes, Ecuador! Gene Randall gets hired because he makes what he does look like journalism. By the way, the PR for this piece of garbage is being done, that's been produced by conservatives for patients' rights. The PR firm doing the flacking on it also managed the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth and their filthy smear campaign against John Kerry. A dog will return to its, and you know the rest of it. All right? Yeah. Let's see if we've still got someone here. Nope. About 22 minutes before the hour. I promised you some other stuff. You know, it's not just the Latino aspect of Sonia Sotomayor's nomination. It's also the female thing, and I don't get it. The right wing don't like girls. I mean, we're talking about open misogyny here. Remember how I told you I was sitting in the doctor's office the other day, feeling like I had fallen down the rabbit hole, watching a real live, honest to God broadcast of Glenn Beck, and he went to commercial, and what did I see but that pasty-faced old chrome-dome dude, the G. Gordon Liddy, that guy who should have been put before a firing squad for what he did in Watergate? Yeah, I know, it's a little bit of a conflict because I don't support the death penalty. But, you know. Every rule was proven in its breach. G. Gordon Liddy was there hustling. You know, you need to buy gold. Well, you know, he's got his own radio show. It was on his radio show that he advised murderous right wingers to always shoot at the heads of federal agents so as to defeat their body armor. Man, that's some quality broadcasting, ain't it? Well, Liddy being Liddy did, of course, bring out the racist smears in regard to Sonia Sotomayor. Here we go. But it's not all just racism. He also don't like girls.
I understand that they found out today that Ms. Sotomayor is a member of La Raza, which means in illegal alien, the race. And that should not surprise anyone because she's already on record with a number of racist comments.
Yeah. Which means an illegal alien. Yeah, it's moments like this. And I admit, these are just nasty little fantasies of mine. I'd like for him to accuse someone of speaking illegal alien to their face and let that person teach him never to say that again, never to engage in that racism again. You know, maybe you maybe use a little bit of that, and because, you know, he's in favor of it because it's not torture. Maybe engage in a little bit of walling with G. Gordon Liddy. Slam his head into a concrete wall and say, "What's my language's name again?" Illegal alien. Slam! Say it again. Illegal alien. Slam! Eventually he'd say, "Your language is Spanish, sir." And the beautiful thing about that is doing that to him wouldn't be torture. It would just be walling. Or maybe a really, really big guy who speaks Spanish could get him in the crook of his elbow, get his little shiny head in the crook of his elbow, and do the attention slap on him. You know, bring his forearm up into G. Gordon Liddy's voice box and cut off the airflow to his brain and then slap the snot out of him to get his attention. And remember, before you think that I'm brutal or sick or something, remember, G. Gordon Liddy says that's not torture. Just, you know, consistency is everything. But no, it's not just the racial slurs. No, it's more.
If a white male were to have made comments like that, the nomination would be probably withdrawn by now. Well, let's hope that the key conferences aren't. When she's menstruating or something.
What? I mean, is this just the babbling, babblesome, stuttering, semi-slurs of an old drunk? I mean, I know. I stutter a little bit. See, I just said I. But this is indefensible.
On by now. Well, let's hope that the key conferences aren't when she's menstruating or something, or just before she's going to menstruate. That would really be bad.
Well, you know, this is then. It's interesting.
Yeah, you know, because the women's get all hysterical when that time of the month rolls around, right, Gord? You know, I beg to just remind G. Gordon Liddy and the rest of Wingnut World that a non-menstruating human started the Second World War. That non-menstruating humans, namely males, have perpetrated the horror of Darfur. Cultures that despise women as much as G. Gordon Liddy does have been responsible for massive humanitarian crises in Pakistan's tribal regions. Let's hope that the key conferences aren't when she's menstruating or something. Or just before she's going to menstruate, that would really be bad. Lord knows what we would get then. High quality, multimillionaire Wingnut Radio on display.
This is deeper, though, than just sexism or racism or whatever. And it's way deeper than liberal or conservative.
Yeah, but she is the one who's bringing all these things in here. All right. Now, you know, during the commercial break, you and I were chatting together, and I think you made an excellent point. There's all this praise for the fact that Obama has chosen an Hispanic, because there hasn't been a Hispanic on the Supreme Court before, and also a woman, and she's only like the third woman And
Jesus, if you were driving, what happens to somebody who's driving down the road listening to this? Do they hit telephone poles? Do they go to sleep and just sort of run off the road and into the ditch? Holy mackerel. I never cease to be amazed at what passes for talent on the right wing. You know, you've got Mark Levin out there, not our Mark Levine, but Mark Levin out there with his voice made for print. And you got this. That's broadcasting? Really? But we expect it from them. But like I've said before, every time I think that I've found the bottom level of their filth, they open the trap door, and there's another sub-basement of hate in the right wing. I guess that's supposed to be quality radio. I didn't hear any rim shots or, penny whistles or anything. Yeah. I didn't hear the wah 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 when he was doing the menstruation gags. You know, like I've said before, everything that underpins all this hate has its roots in fear. G. Gordon Liddy actually fears the biological processes of the female of the species. And that fear engenders hate. Why would you get worked up about a biological process? I mean, Jesus, G. Gordon, look at that porn mustache you've got. You know, I hope if you were nominated to the Supreme Court that it wouldn't, the key conferences wouldn't be had when you had a terrible bout of sinusitis and had crap draining out of your nose into your porn stash. Well, what did you say? Lord knows what we would get then. How ignorant. How pathetically ignorant. Running out of time, but let's take a quick call. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Dear.
Hey, Susan.
Real fast. I noticed that Dear G. Gordon does not have the guts to say this to her face. But I'm going to insult him, and I will, if he wants me to, I'll do it to his face. Hey, Dear G. Gordon, not only are you a son of a bitch, but your mother did every soldier in Fort Bragg and Fort Hood, and so did your sister.
Or as we like to say in the hills, hey, G. Gordon, the best part of you ran down your mama's leg, son.
Exactly. You should have been strangled at birth.
I know.
Now,
and you know,
you want me to say that to your face, I will.
Well, and because, Susan, you know, we don't shy away, you know, we're liberals, we're progressives, we're not afraid of what the human body does, okay? Doesn't he also display his ignorance? Isn't Sonia Sotomayor 54 years old?
Yeah.
At some point, either in the recent past or in the fairly recent future, isn't menstruation going to be a non-issue for her?
Yep.
Because, I mean, that's just biology, right?
Uh-huh. But let's face it, it's not about her biology. It's about his and his very teeny, tiny, weeny.
I thought you were going to say teeny, tiny brain, but right, yeah. Because after all, like Woody Allen, my brain is my second favorite sex organ.
Yeah, well, his brain is about the... let's face it, they're one and the same. And, you know, they're... Teeny, tiny.
Yeah.
He's a dickless wonder, and that's the only way he can get back at women.
Yeah, it's kind of like that Australian PSA that was out a few years back, or a year or so ago, that was trying to get young Australian men to stop speeding in town, and they just they created this little symbol where women would hold up their pinkies, sort of crooked and, you know, limp-looking, and that's what you were supposed to do to the driver when you caught him, just reminding him that because of his behavior, you figure he probably had a short one.
Yep.
That's our right wing nuts. Thank you, Susan. Have a wonderful weekend.
Oh, and by the way, hubby says he's coming home tomorrow again.
Well, I hope he does, but you know what? I hope if he's not supposed to before the doctors want him to, that he don't.
Well, that's what's surprising. He says the doctor says that he's going to come home.
Well, then come on home, Donald. If the doctor says you can, you can.
Yeah.
Not a hard rule. Just, yeah. Well, we'll be rooting for him, Susan.
Okay. But again, hey, Gordon, I'll say it to your face if you want me to, which is more nerve than you got.
Ain't that the truth?
Bye.
Bye now. Poor little sexually insecure right-wing nuts. And a reminder, when next you hear from me, if all goes as planned, it will be from the Secure Our Future Now conference hosted at the Omni Shore Hotel in Washington, D.C. And I will not be on live at my regular slot. I will be live, and this is going to be weird, so tune in to hear Bob sort of, hiss and so forth because he's broadcasting during daylight hours. I'll be live at noon Eastern time Monday. That's going to be weird. So you got to be here. God only knows what it's going to sound like. So that's Monday. Looking forward to it. Hope you are, too. Just the last few minutes, I got to share this with you. This was from your RDA of irony today, our buddy Eugene Finnerman, the world's most brilliant satirist. You know how I love history. And Eugene does, too, only he makes it come alive. Just something to think about. Memorial Day, 1453. Jennifer Aniston is in a bad mood today. And the reason predates Brad Pitt by 556 years. This is the anniversary of the fall of Constantinople, a day of mourning among Greeks. By 1453, Byzantium was an empire in name and memory. It once had been the greatest power in Christendom, extending from Italy to Mesopotamia. Now it was reduced to a ruined city and a few remnant outposts on the Greek mainland. Its emperors bore a revered title that dated to Constantine, but they wore crowns with paste jewels. Yet, built on an easily defended peninsula and guarded by the most formidable walls in Europe, Constantinople had defied attack for 1,000 years. The Ottoman Turks had conquered the Balkans, but they had learned through past failures to avoid Constantinople. Mehmed II wanted the imperial city for his capital. He gathered an army of 80,000 men, nearly twice the size of the population of Constantinople. His siege equipment included the largest cannons in the world. Furthermore, he created a navy to blockade the port city. Against this force, Constantinople had a garrison of 7,000 men, Greeks and their Genoese allies. Christendom was prepared to mourn Constantinople, but not help her. 9 years earlier, a Christian army led by the King of Poland and the Prince of Transylvania embarked on a crusade against the Turks. Their crusade ended at the Battle of Varna, when their 20,000 men confronted the Sultan's 80,000. By the end of the day, the King of Poland's head was on a pike, and the rest of his army did not look much better. The Prince of Transylvania escaped the Turks, but making his way home was captured and held for ransom by the Prince of Wallachia, a notably nasty fellow named Vlad Dracul. The Turks probably would have been more gracious. Catholic Europe could barely defend herself against the Ottomans. She could not help the Greek Orthodox of Constantinople. Yet however much in decline and decay, the city defied conquest. Its formidable walls withstood the Turks' onslaught and 8 weeks of siege. 4 times the Turks, with their overwhelming numbers, attempted to storm the city, and each effort was a bloody failure. You can still see headstones of the fallen Janissaries outside the walls of Constantinople. The Sultan's engineers attempted to mine the walls. The Byzantines mined the Turkish mines. You can't outfox a Byzantine. In his frustration, and quite contrary to teacher, Sultan Mehmed offered to negotiate. To us, his terms were not all that generous. He would spare the city if it surrendered. Keep in mind, however, that his soldiers expected to loot the city. Sparing Constantinople, the Sultan would be paying off his disappointed horde out of his own coffers. But Constantinople refused to surrender. Despite its decline, the old capital still trusted in heaven's protection and its imperial destiny. Turkish War Council was starting to come to the same conclusion, but then heaven seemed to show a Muslim bias. On May 23rd, 1453, there was a lunar eclipse, and the Turks were heartened to see a crescent moon matching the one on their flags. The fifth attack was on this day in 1453. Constantine XI, the last emperor of Byzantium, removed his imperial insignia before leading his men into their last battle. He would deny the Turks any way of identifying his body and making a trophy of it. The Sultan attempted to curtail the rampage of his victorious soldiers, protecting the city's major churches and buildings. As he instructed his soldiers in the etiquette of looting, "The people are yours, but the city is mine." Even then, he only allowed his men a full day of looting. After that, Constantinople and any surviving citizens were under his protection. The Sultan was only 21, and he would go on to conquer Serbia and Romania, and he was beginning an invasion of Italy when he died in 1480. But he is remembered chiefly for taking a decaying old city and then restoring it to its grandeur. Constantinople did indeed have an imperial destiny, and for the next 450 years, it would be the capital of the Ottoman Empire. Today, the city is known as Istanbul, except on Greek maps. There, the name defiantly remains Constantinople. Thank you, Eugene. What a beautiful valedictory for one of the greatest cities the world has ever known. And that's the program for tonight. Thank you for joining in. I hope you will be with me Monday at noon. Oh, this is going to be weird. Hope you'll be here. I think it'll be enjoyable. Looking forward to it. Thanks to everybody who makes this all happen. John Fox, Peter Godbold, Sue, Lottie, News Ninja Gene, News Ninja Susan, Texas Betsy. Thanks to you who, with your financial support, keep the horn alive. As we continue, we will continue largely with you and your support. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, who also support this program, CRMW.net and CoalRiverWind.org. They are indeed the bravest, hardest-working people I know, and I am honored with their association. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Bob is not playing hooky on Friday, but his network interface connection may darn well have been. It's Friday, Front Porch Friday. Pardon me while I knock the dust off my trouser pants as I head for the rocking chair on the front porch. I've been crawling around under the dadgum desk for the last, and trust me, it's not one of those crawling around under the desk kind of parts. It's fun. Been crawling around under the desk for the last couple of hours, as one of our buddies says, herding goats. I'm here, but I'm dead from the neck up. It's about 13 minutes past the hour. I am late. I don't like to be late, but I also don't like to miss shows unless, you know, I've got, you know, a limb hanging or something. You know me. I have a feeling we will have some fun tonight. After all, there's still a lot of furor over that woman. That woman. That woman! We are speaking, of course, of the Honorable Sonia Sotomayor. I know, it's probably, some of you are a little tired of it, but you know what? I'm not. Because every time the right wing pumps out this filth, we understand a little bit better how desperate they are and how near to dead they are. This is all just warm up to the actual funeral music for the right wing. Plenty of pop that pee, Bob, for God's sakes. Plenty of evidence along those lines, including, and I really do think we have to start with this tonight, including installment number 3 of the Tom Tancredo hit parade. Last night it was La Raza. You remember La Raza, the one that sings about the colors of the rainbow. La Raza is a Latino KKK. Before that, what was it? They're all beginning to run together for me now. Well, and again, I persist in my essential question, to wit. What is this man doing on the air? What expertise does he have apart from the fact that he is a bigoted, hate-filled, pus-bag freak from the right wing? Why not just have the Grand Dragon on and get done with it? Exalted Noble Lumpkin? Why not? It's the same. So today he shows up on MSNBC. It goes MSNBC, CNN, MSNBC. He's like a little ping pong ball, isn't he? God knows he's got about as much brains inside him as there is inside a ping pong ball. That woman. No, this time they're expanding the base. He shows up on MSNBC this afternoon. Where he takes questions from David Schuster. And of course, there's a game here. And I understand what the game is. Maybe this is why he keeps showing up. because maybe some of this really is driving home the point, driving home the fact that the oxymoron, Flush Flimbault, my friends, give me a pill, and a little Dominican boy. Flush Flimbault is the head of the Republican Party once and for all. And so David Schuster queries Tom Tancredo. That's an old Arapaho name, meaning doesn't like people darker than him. And, it's Italian. Well, just, this is good. This is kind of precious.
Here's what Rush Limbaugh said about Sotomayor. Watch. How do you get promoted in a Barack Obama administration? By hating white people. Or even saying you do. Or that they're not good. Or that put them down, whatever. Make white people the new oppressed minority. And they're going right along with it because they're shutting up. They're moving to the back of the bus. They're saying, I can't use that drinking fountain. Okay. I can't.
Okay. We're dealing here with audio from video. And I just have to tell you, because it's my job. You know, the really great radio people can make things come alive in your mind and make things visual for you. I'm going to try that for just a moment here, if that's all right. Flush Flimbaugh has really got to do something. He's got this ditto cam thing going there, and his cheaply gold-plated Electrovoice RE20, the same microphone we use here in the fabulous Horn Studios. But and he's sitting there behind it. But today he's wearing, or in this video he's wearing, a yellow polo shirt. And I got to tell you, he looks like a living lemon. There's so much of him, and as a person of girth, I comprehend this. But there are fashion choices you make when you're a large guy like me or Flush, and there are choices you don't make. I don't wear, for instance, shirts with horizontal stripes because it just looks like the stripes go on and on forever. I wear it, and they're hard to find. I used to have a really nice rugby shirt that instead of having horizontal stripes, it had vertical stripes. And I loved that thing. The store that where I bought it the millions of years ago when I rode to the store on the back of my dinosaur is now out of business, of course. It's been run into the ground by predatory capitalism. It was a little chain of stores. There was one in the Lenox Mall in Atlanta where I lived. Not in the Lenox Mall. I didn't live in the Lenox Mall, of course. I lived in Atlanta. And there was a store there called Britches of Georgetown. They had the best khakis I have ever owned in my life. Great Madras shirts, wonderful shorts, and this wonderful vertically striped gold and blue, because I am at all times a mountaineer.